Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice with Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and I'm joined today by a venerable, honorable cast of Whovian experts, of which I am not.
I don't know if I would call me venerable or anything resembling respectable, but I am a Whovian.
Well, introduce yourselves, people.
Okay. I am Liz Carley. I am a staffer at Gallifrey One, the largest North American Doctor Who fan-run convention in the world, in North America. I am a Whovian, and Matt Smith is my doctor. He's how I came in. He's who I fell in love with first. And I do a lot of writing about Doctor Who. I do a lot of writing for Slice of Sci-Fi and Krypton Radio. And you can actually find my recent review of the beginning of Season 9 on Krypton Radio. And you'll find out more about my opinions later.
I'm Tim Callender. That's all we need to know about that.
Are you in fact a Whovian, Tim?
I'm a Whovian. Yeah, I would say that.
Okay, then you are allowed to stay. So okay. That's good to know as well.
He's a Whovian as opposed to a Whovie out.
Yes. That's how the doctor pressed my button, as it were.
Oh. Ba-dum-bum.
Oh, boy.
So that's Tim. I'm Jill. I should say a long-time Whovian, first-time caller. I was a fourth doctor starter, fell in love with Pertwee, but David Tennant has my heart, and there's nothing else I can do.
And I'm S.F. Edwards, writer of the Spiral War books, and I was raised on Doctor Who by my dad on Saturday nights on PBS.
Nice.
Often falling asleep in the middle of an episode as a young child, and grew up primarily on the Fourth Doctor, but came to appreciate almost all of them. Mm-hmm. And I even converted my wife with the new series. So,
ooh, you're recruiting. Points for you.
Baptism by Time Stream.
My boys watch it too.
There you go. Just passing on the Whovian knowledge from generation to generation.
One of us.
Google gobble. Google gobble.
I didn't actually. I knew of Doctor Who. I had seen it in the listings on PBS when I was a kid, but I never watched it. And it wasn't until like the new series started up with Eccleston that I started watching it. And I'm like, hey, this is actually pretty good. But like Jill, it was David Tennant who literally captured me as a fan of that particular Doctor, I'm going to say.
Yes.
But we have so much Doctor Who-ness. Because we have people speculating on the end of Season 8. We have people speculating on Season 9, the two-parter there. And we have discussion, or shall we say debate, about BBC America's recent, I wouldn't call it a decree. I would call it a newfangled list of what they call the Doctor's finest from the new Doctor series. And I looked at those 8 episodes, and I had only seen 4 of them. And I said, okay, by whose count are these the best? And I decided to ask. I got a few answers, but I would like to broach the subject with you all. The 8 episodes are Blink.
Yep.
The Waters of Mars.
Yep.
The End of Time.
Yep.
Vincent and the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes.
Yep.
The Doctor's Wife.
Yes.
Yes.
The Day of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
The Time of the Doctor.
Nah.
And Deep Breath.
I think what that list really is, mm-hmm. is somebody, Summer, you and I have had this discussion.
Yes.
If you had to take the 6 essential episodes from the first season of Babylon 5,
yes.
what would they be? All right. And how difficult that task is.
Yes.
I think what this is.
I'm still working on that list.
Right. Exactly. I think what this list is, just as a broad overview, is a scattershot primer to get people on the fence or who may have heard about this Doctor Who thing. And where do you start?
I think then they really need to retitle it A Starter's Guide to Doctor Who. Because I would argue there were a few episodes that were completely left out that definitely qualified as better than some listed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would have to agree, yeah.
So rather than the Doctor's Finest for our current crop of modern era Doctors, this is, you think, more of an easy way for people who have not watched 8 seasons of Doctor Who, for them to catch up, familiarize themselves with all of the new Doctors, and then jump into season 9 feeling comfortable.
Yeah, because here's the other thing, Summer, that you missed. I'm looking at the list here on the BBC America site, and one of the Doctor's Finest moments that's listed is An Adventure in Space and Time, which is the docudrama that they did about the creation of the show back in 63. Mm-hmm.
That actually wasn't listed. Interesting.
Well, it depends upon which list you're looking at, because there are 10 episodes in the best modern Doctor Who episodes through the Telegraph. So I guess it depends upon where the list comes from.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, Summer, how many shows do you want to record that we argue what should be the essential episodes? Really kind of what it boils down to.
Oh.
Look, here's one thing I'll say just to kind of, if anything, to put a boundary on the discussion. I've got a friend, an old friend, my friend Lynn, who is not a geek by any stretch of the imagination, but has become a fan of Firefly. I wouldn't call her a brown coat, but she knows it and she enjoys it. And I managed to get her interested and hooked on Doctor Who. Well, I had a conversation with her the other day, and she said she went back to try to watch, as she puts it, the Doctor with the curly hair and the long scarf.
Okay.
And the problem she had with it is that the production values are so poor,
mm-hmm,
that she just couldn't get into it. She couldn't get past the fact that everything looked like it was made out of cardboard and tinfoil, and the alien planet looked like a quarry, and all the things that endear old school Whovians with those early episodes, because there's a certain amount of nostalgia. But I think it is very clear that you have to decouple the 26 year run of Doctor Who from the current 9-10 year run of Doctor Who.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I actually think that there's a lot to do with story too, because there are, you know, I'm very much a Who noob. I am just kind of dipping my toe into classic Who, but I have developed a soft spot for the Third Doctor, and I've seen maybe 3 or 4 of his stories. But I remember the first one I ever saw, I think it was Monsters of Peladon. I may be getting the name of the episode wrong. The DVD I have is in the other room. But it was the first one I saw. It didn't really catch my interest very much. And I was just coming off of Matt Smith and everything. Later, I went back and I watched the Third Doctor's first story, which involved the, I'm having a brain fart, the mannequin aliens.
And the plastic.
Yeah, the Autons.
The Autons, thank you. Yeah, his first story involved the Autons, and it was a good story. You know, you're watching the Doctor come into his own, he's brand new regeneration, and it was a good story, but it did have all those same kind of, you know, kind of craptastic production values, because this was, you know, the early stages of the show and whatnot. One of the very first Doctor Who episodes I ever saw, and I was trying to get into it, and I couldn't during the Tennant's era. One of the first episodes I ever saw was the Olympics episode with Tennant and Billy Piper.
Yeah, Fear Her.
That was Fear Her, yes.
Yeah. Fear Her. One of the very first episodes I ever saw. Watched it, and I could not connect to it. I could not latch on to it, but I, you know, later on, I could connect with a Third Doctor story very easily versus another story. So it didn't have to do with the production. It had to do with the story itself. And Fear Her was one that just, it never got to me. You know, flash forward to the 11th hour, that grabbed me. So I think it has a lot to do with how the story is constructed, and not necessarily terribly much to do with the production values and stuff. Because, yeah, they might be kind of campy and low rent, but they can still, you know, be endearing as long as they're telling a good story.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you also have to have a mindset that's able to look past the surface of the production values and get to the heart of it.
Well, I know the way I got my wife into it, and I'm trying to remember exactly how she started watching. I think she basically saw me watching and was like, what is this? I'm like, it's Doctor Who. She's like, oh, my dad used to watch this when I was a kid. And I said, okay, well, let's, you know, if you want to try it out. Honestly, I just started her straight out with Eccleston's first episode, Rose, and she was hooked from that point on.
That was a good episode.
It's a fantastic episode to start somebody on to Doctor Who with, because it is the beginning of the new series. Now, like you, she's never been able to quite get into the classic series because of the production values are so. She appreciates the stories for what they are, but it has a harder time getting past the production values. But she appreciates so much of the classic BBC stuff that she can kind of look past that and get into it. But she still prefers the modern era, and like me, we're both saddened that Eccleston didn't continue on for a second season, and then Tennant. You know, we're firmly behind those two the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, out of the 8 episodes they selected, which ones would you have replaced, and what would you have replaced them with? As
if it is a list for people who are just getting into Who, you have to have Rose on there, because that one really does introduce you to the Doctor, to the whole experience of Doctor Who,
mm-hmm.
in a very quick and interesting manner. You're like, okay, this is who this person is, this is what he does, I'm on board.
Yeah, and I'll agree with that, because Rose, like I said, I watched Rose, I had never gotten into Doctor Who before, Rose aired, I watched it, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. I think I will watch some more to find out what this Doctor Who obsession is all about. And then when he regenerated at the end into David Tennant, I was like, what? And then we got to know David Tennant, and I was like, I absolutely love this.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. You know, you look at this list, and it basically encapsulates the two most recent Doctors, plus the introduction of the current Doctor. So again, as sort of a primer, it's functional. I think if I had anything to trade out, as much as I like the Waters of Mars, I'd probably swap that for the Family of Blood two-parter. They're both the equal. Length in terms of storytelling, but I think that one, it's less science fiction-y, if you will, because it takes place in 1913 as opposed to 2076. You know, the end of time, that's okay, because it shows it's the introduction of the concept of the regeneration, but it's that one seems to be a little more maudlin, and I think that you don't get a sense of who the 10th Doctor is so that you really feel for why he's changing. You know, I mean, it's all very cursory. Now, I love Vincent and the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's brilliant stuff. The Doctor's wife is really good. And one of the things that I think actually works is that they, with the Matt Smith episodes, they didn't get into the real goofy stuff with the crack in the universe in Amy's wall. You know, they've sidestepped that whole story arc, which really, when you stop and think about it, and you shouldn't, because it stops making any sort of sense.
Yeah.
Day of the Doctor is not a bad introduction to the concept of multiple Doctors and multiple timelines, but I think the Time of the Doctor, I've gone back and watched it, and I think I understand what Moffat was trying to do with it, but if I was, like, sitting somebody down to introduce them into Doctor Who, that is not an episode that I would give them.
Okay. No.
Yeah, I agree, but probably not for the same reason that some people have.
What about something like The Empty Child, The Doctor Dances.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yes. Right.
Are You My Mummy? I mean, to day, Arwen, when she wants to scare the crap out of me, will walk up to me and go, Are You My Mummy?
Yeah, that's one that I was surprised didn't make it, because that not only gives us a historical example of the Doctor trying to fix a problem that never should have happened, but we also get introduced to Captain Jack.
Yes! Squeeze.
And who doesn't love Captain Jack? Well, everybody loves Captain Jack, apparently.
Well, are there any Eccleston stories on that list?
There was.
No, there are no Eccleston stories. No, and again...
That may be part of it, because there is still some bad blood there, and maybe that's why they didn't include any Eccleston stuff on the list.
Good
when
point.
Really, you kind of need it for the modern era.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't think of any other actor who could have brought Doctor Who back the way he did.
Well,
it really was the good kick that they needed.
Yeah,
and deep breath you have to have, because if you're introducing people to what the show is, you know, you kind of continue the concept of introducing what a regeneration is. You've got it with the end of time, so you see where 10 regenerates into 11, and then you've got it with, you know, time of the Doctor with that regeneration, and then deep breath is that regeneration, the cycle again, just to kind of reiterate that this really is one of the central, well, pun intended, central tenets of the Doctor Who universe. I, you know, what really shocks me is that there's no Dalek stories in here.
That's interesting as well.
What about, I mean, well, then there, how about Dalek 2005 with Eccleston and...
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Perfect.
Oh,
again.
Yeah.
Again, those are your primers. Those are your primers to get you into Doctor Who, the Eccleston episodes, because it introduces pretty much all the major bad guys with the exception of the Cybermen. And even then, you still get a nod to the Cybermen in Dalek.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. I think that's what I should do. We should have a discussion offline and come up with two episodes for the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th Doctor to give us our own list of 8.
Okay. I agree. I approve of this message.
And they can be two-parters. You know, one episode can be a two-parter because...
Oh, good.
We can... Because we can. Because I'm in charge of this, damn it, and I say go. So we're going to have a different list of what our Slice of Sci-Fi official New Doctor primer should be. And that was a lot easier to come up with than a season one of Babylon 5.
Yeah.
So I guess what you're saying is our opinions have been saved.
Yes.
For next episode.
Yes, they have. Oh, goodness. So... The season 8 transition into season 9, the primer we realize is a way to drop people into the new Doctor, the new modern Doctor era, so people can jump right into season 9 feeling comfortable. Is there a... is there a spoiler-free way to go from the end of season 8 into season 9?
Spoiler free. Well,
in what way?
Yeah, I there isn't a at the end of series 8, to be all British about it. there wasn't a cliffhanger that was left there.
Yeah.
Well,
it wasn't a cliffhanger, but it was a surprise. It was kind of a what the what?
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right, fine. It's not really a spoiler.
Season 8, the actual end episode. Are you considering the Christmas episode, the end?
This is true.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if you're coming in brand new, it's. He's still kind of status quo where he's been most of the new series. You know, he's on his own. He doesn't know where any of the other Time Lords are, if they exist or survived or anything, sort of.
Yep.
But...
I mean, I have to say, if anything, one of the things I think that works well with Capaldi's beginning of the tenure as a doctor is it is almost a fresh start.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I was going to grab a complete noob who's interested in Doctor Who, yeah, maybe a couple of the previous doctors just to get flavor of it. But for the most part, I think you can drop somebody into this, you know, somebody of reasonable intelligence. And it just, okay, why is he acting, you know, in deep breath. Okay, you kind of explain, all right, he's been regenerated. That's the, you know, and you just have to explain it. This is the concept. This is how, and put it in real world terms. This is how the show gets around changing the lead every so often. People, okay, fine. And then after that, you know, there's really no arc that's carried over. You know, there's some older characters like the Paternoster gang, obviously, but the concept of the Daleks, you just tell them these are the Doctor's ancient nemesis. Okay, done and done. You know, and then the rest of it, even when you get to the end, the introduction of Missy. All right, this is the, remember how I told you the Doctor regenerates? Well, also, this is a regeneration.
The bad guys do.
Yeah, the bad guys do too. Exactly. You know, there's a lot of stuff in here that's good standalone stories, but does also play into, you know, a continuing story, what with the relationship between Clara and Danny Pink. And with Clara, you don't get any of the Impossible Girl nonsense that made her such a lame character in the Matt Smith era.
I would say lame, but not as developed a character.
Which all she was a cipher. She was just a puzzle for the Doctor to solve. And here with Capaldi, you know, the character becomes really three-dimensional, and that's a good way to introduce people. This is what companions are. This is what they do. This is where they help the Doctor. So there you go.
I would definitely agree. She becomes her own character with Capaldi, and I think that is one of the most quoted lines around this house last year was, "He's your dad. He's your space dad." I mean, that was perfect, you know.
Yeah. And one of the things that I like about the relationship between Clara and the 12th Doctor is they've done away with any hint of romance, it worked with the 10th Doctor and Rose. That was really nice. My personal feeling about Martha is that she was a missed opportunity with all the mooning, you know, and, oh, I want him to love me, but she, you know, and of course, you know, with Donna, they were just really best mates traveling around.
I still love Donna. She was just perfect.
She's my second favorite companion. Huh. Yeah.
Oh, I do love Donna. I love me some sassy companion.
Yep.
Well, she's a sass master, man.
So to answer your original question, Summer, there's no, you know, spoiler free. We don't have to worry about being spoiler free because there really isn't anything that carries directly over one to the other that doesn't give anything away from.
I was trying to be gentle with people who hadn't seen the end of season 8 yet, and my thing was the master came back as the mistress. Hello,
Missy.
I love Missy. Can I tell you?
Missy is hilarious.
She's like my third favorite person. If I'm gonna run to the other side of the tracks and run off with a woman, she's my third choice.
Oh, fun.
There is just a level of gumption that she has that is delicious. I mean, really.
Absolute feistiness, would you say?
Yes. Yes.
Just the right mix of insane and intelligent, and you have no idea what she's going to do next.
You know, I as opposed to previous incarnations of the Doctor, who I found to be more of the mustache-twirling bumblers who more get in their own, you know, trip on their own feet more than anything else, she is delightfully unhinged. Much more unpredictable. And that whole scene in The Magician's Apprentice where Claire is like trying to figure out why Missy needs her help to find the doctor, and says, well, what made you switch over to being good? And then Missy proceeds to vaporize to you know, undercover soldiers, unit soldier stammer. She goes, I didn't become good. But she's also will say there are bigger things, you know, more things here at stake than just me being cruel for the sake of being cruel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in the introduction of the Master as Missy, or Missy as the Master, however you want to put that, I think it does change the dynamic between these two, you know, immortal enemies, to the point where they almost need each other more now for whatever reason. You know, Missy knows where Gallifrey is. The Doctor needs Missy to find out where Gallifrey is, how many other Time Lords have survived or are not. And then there's just the whole concept of, we're now the last two of the species that we know of, and we're male and female.
Well, you know? But to point, and Tim, you'll have to remind me where we saw this, where there was some implication that Missy, a la the Master, is actually the Doctor's brother. So is this an incest line that we're following?
Oh.
I don't know about that one.
They
were boyhood friends.
Well. I've heard that theory as well, but every showrunner has been like, no. And even, I think it was even Tennant when they made that comment. And he's like, somebody's like, it was with Freema where she makes the comment of, you're not going to tell me it's like really your long lost brother or something. And he looks at her and goes, no, God, no. You know, this isn't. You know, this isn't some silly TV show or something like that.
Right.
Right. Right. Love it.
So, yeah, that was their way of nipping that rumor in the bud, I guess.
Exactly.
I wish somebody, like, I wish my friends would call me delightfully unhinged, but... Because that just sounds so... Like I've achieved something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
To go truly geek and let my flag fly in 20-sided dice... Is she not truly chaotic neutral?
Ooh.
As someone who has played chaotic neutral rangers in the past and chaotic neutral thieves, yeah, I can do that.
Maybe we'll just start referring to you as unhinged.
Awesome.
Delightfully unhinged.
Delightfully unhinged.
Delightfully.
I'm adding that to my Twitter mood thing or whatever they call it.
There you go. There you go. I would love it if somebody called me delightfully unhinged too. Wait a minute. People call me delightfully unhinged all the time. Should I be worried?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay, good.
Embrace only if you start vaporizing people.
Embrace it.
Oh, I haven't vaporized anybody in days. Don't worry about it.
Okay, all right.
So, speaking of other feisty females in the Doctor's universe, River Song is due to make an appearance in this year's Christmas special.
This makes me so happy. I have so many emotions.
I have such mixed feelings about that.
Really?
Yeah, I love River Song. Believe me, I absolutely adore
her.
Yeah, I am dating her, actually. Yes. I got married to her first. It was very strange. I'm not sure how that worked out.
What?
Oh, wait a minute. Have we done Jim the Fish yet?
No.
Okay. But I also think that I would really like to let the 12th Doctor develop more of his own relationships, and especially with the announced departure of Jenna Coleman. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think it's one thing to make some wonderful references back to the deep history of the show, like in The Magician's Apprentice, when the Doctor first is brought before Davros, and Davros is recounting all the various conversations that he and the Doctor have had over the millennia, and they bring out the little bit from Genesis of the Daleks with the fourth Doctor. I like those kinds of nods because they're nice Easter eggs for longtime fans, but they don't necessarily detract from the story that's going on, you know, for people whether you're old or new. I think if you're bringing in characters that are more closely associated with a particular Doctor's run, in my mind, it just kind of smacks of a little bit of stunt casting, if you will.
Okay.
I would disagree. I think especially with River Song, the sense of her timeline going in a reverse direction and the sense that she is a permanent fixture as she goes along, as Sarah Jane almost used to be, I think it makes sense for her to periodically show up.
I agree. It's like she's developed a connection to the Doctor. I don't think I could compare it completely to the one that the Master has with the Doctor, but it's kind of in a similar vein. You know, they're kind of inexorably tangled with each other. So, I mean, for her to make an appearance, it doesn't seem like it's a huge event. I mean, yes, River Song, we love her, yay, but it's just, you know, River and the Doctor and River. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So,
I have a question for Tim. If
yes.
her name wasn't a play on the name of Amy and Rory's daughter, Melody Pond River Song.
Yeah, although if the reverse, but go ahead.
Yeah, but if her name wasn't a play that was so closely attached with those two, would it make a difference to you?
No, because that whole arc of her, you know, when she's introduced with the 10th Doctor, that's part of the mystery of who she is, okay, is this woman who says, well, I happen to be your wife. And it plays with that notion very effectively of the time traveler, where linear time doesn't has
no basis in reality.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I was trying to find a good way to say it, but that's a better way to say it. You know, so or rather, it shows that the time traveler who doesn't follow linear time can be confused by that notion. He is not as in control of how time works for his life as he might want to think it is. So that's that she becomes a very compelling character, okay? But as River Song is developed through the 11th Doctor, and when they reveal how she's his wife and it's sort of a cheat kind of to get around some tight corners that Moffat painted himself into, I just assumed that, you know, at that point, bring back Rowena. If you're going to go back to the Doctor's past, go all the way back. and that carries on with the nods that we've gotten through Moffat's tenure of nodding back to the classic Who era. There's at this point for me, River Song, whether she's named Ethel Merman, comes with so much... A certain history,
baggage.
Yeah, I wasn't going to use that word because that's there's certain negative connotations there. I just think that her story has been told. I mean, I'll remain. You know, if they pull it off well, I would be very happy. Don't misunderstand me. You know, I loved Alex Kingston in the role, and she's beautiful, and I'm dating her. Yes. But I just, you know, let's kind of keep moving on. Let's keep going forward.
Okay, so mark on the list, Tim, not a fan of not a fan of Deus Ex River Song. So,
and again, I would be happy to be wrong.
Cool.
So,
is there anything you would like to mention about your expectations or speculations for season 9?
Well, you know, given some of the things that we saw in The Magician's Apprentice, first of all, I would like to say that as of right now, Capaldi is my favorite Doctor.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bold statement.
It is a bold statement, but I'll tell you why. He harkens back to some of the earlier Doctors who were very alien. Okay, it isn't that he's crotchety in the way that the first Doctor was, okay, but he does not suffer fools gladly. He is willing to help as long as you are willing to work with him. As soon as you do something stupid, all right, it's on to you. You suffer the consequences. I've got other things that I got to take care of. We saw that especially in Into the Dalek, where it's basically Fantastic Voyage inside a Dalek. We see that in Deep Breath, where Clara's trapped on one side of a portcullis, and she says, well, give me your sonic screwdriver, and I'll get myself out. And he looks at her and pockets the screwdriver, says, I might need this, and walks away. Now, he doesn't leave her behind, but it's like clearly, you know, he's working. They show that he's working at a bigger level. He's also, as the series has gone on, and you look at his costume, he's dispensed with any of the flamboyant sort of costuming that any of the other doctors have had. I even include Tennant in the fact that, you know, he was wearing the pinstripe suit with the Chuck Taylors.
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain – Capaldi looks like he'd just be a guy you'd see on the street. He's even dispensed with the short cape with the red velvet lining. He's – just it's like he doesn't have time for any nonsense like that, and I find that really compelling. And with the Magician's Apprentice, you see that he's even being stripped down to questioning some of the notions he's had for what he does.
Well, I would argue he has not yet dispensed with the clothing. But for this specific episode, it has gone to such a raw level, without being too spoilerific. The scene between Clara, Missy, and why she's there implies a level of desperation and... what's the word I'm looking for? It implies a level of bare-bones necessity to dispense with almost all things around and to go primal. And I'll use the guitar as the instrument of said primal. It seems very much in keeping, but the question is, well, clearly I don't know what's going on for the next few episodes yet, but I expect we'll see him back in his bejacked cape soon.
Mm. Yeah, because when I first saw that, I thought Beatles.
Yeah, okay, right.
I mean, you know, I'm not a Beatles fan. I had that beaten out of me, metaphorically speaking, in high school. Sorry. But I don't remember which trailer it was, but there was one moment where he spins around, and I just, for some reason, the trailer for Help popped into my mind. I'm like, the new Doctor is a Beatle? What?
No, it's Moffat, not Moppet.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So my brother and I, who were guitar gearheads, we were, you know, he tracked down the make and model of that guitar. It's a Yamaha Flying Samurai, which is no longer in production. It had a run, and well, that was my comment to him was, I said, well, do you think Yamaha's scrambling to get that back into production?
Oh, yeah.
And his response was, yeah, and all the models that are out there, the prices have just skyrocketed because of all the cosplayers.
You know, I was just telling a friend the other day, he was talking about after the episode, well, now I need to go and get myself, you know, I own a guitar already. Now I need to go and get myself a pair of dark glasses and a cool t-shirt. And I was like, just grow your hair out a little bit and you'll be ready for a cosplay.
This will be the easiest cosplay going forward.
You think? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Effortless.
How is the Yamaha easier to come by than the Chuck Taylors? Explain that.
I was going to say it is not, because you're going to get all kinds of people going, well, no, you got the headstock wrong on that, and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
But the true cosplayer can understand that you work with what you have, and it is the essence of the character, and shut up.
Pretty much.
The cosplayers, in my experience, are very, very picky. They're very, very, I wouldn't say obsessed, but they pay attention to the detail of the costumes.
Detail-oriented,
yes. And the only people, other people who I have met who are as detail-oriented are classic car collectors. I know this as someone who used to own a very, very sweet 1965 Mustang Fastback, 3-speed, 302, 4-barrel carb, dual exhaust, 235, wide footprint tires for that off-the-line speed, and, oh yeah, baby, V8 therapy. Can you tell I missed that car?
Wait. But the real important question is, what color was it?
It was royal blue with the GT stripes along the side. The interior was the only non-1965 thing in there was seat belts.
Yeah.
And literally, I could have gotten away with not installing the seat belts because it was a 1965 and seat belts were not mandated until 1967. But I figured not having to have an imprint of the steering wheel in my chest, you know, in case of an accident would be a good thing for my health. So we installed seat belts.
Right.
You are wise and have much knowledge.
So I will never be a Darwin Award winner, just saying. But yeah, so
life goals, man.
I think the operative word there was life.
Yes. So yeah, so the Yamaha, I would actually be curious, see if somebody actually follows the price trending of that guitar.
You know, it's funny because I went looking yesterday trying to find and it doesn't seem to even be a guitar that's out there that anybody's selling one way or the other. Now, I'll give it a week or so and I'll let you know what I find.
Okay. When what years was it actually made?
It was made in the late 60s into about the early to mid 80s, best as I can tell.
Hmm. What's the name of it again?
It's called the Yamaha Flying Samurai. Now, you have to be very careful because Yamaha created a number of different models of that. I did catch that, and the Yamaha, it's been a little challenging search, and I haven't pursued it as diligently as maybe I ought to, but anyway.
Someone has some work to do.
Apparently so.
Interesting.
And the other thing my brother and I comment on is you know now that the shop where they bought the story is that they saw in the script that the doctor was going to be playing guitar and Capaldi just didn't want any run-of-the-mill guitar. He needed something that was specifically the doctor, so they went, you know, trawling through music stores and pawn shops looking for something, and he found this guitar. Said, yeah, this looks like something that a doctor would play. It looks kind of, you know, handmade and customized and all the rest. It's like, well, you know, the shop where he bought that has now got a sign that says, we sold the doctor his guitar.
Nice.
You got to know that they have. Now, you know, with all this, we haven't really talked about the episode much.
There you go.
Yeah.
So this is part one of a two-parter?
Yes.
Okay. Lead on, McDuff.
Well, how spoilerific do we want to get here?
Not too spoilery, but enough to tease.
Enough to tease. Okay. The doctor finds himself, actually the episode opens up on a war-torn planet of very strange mix of technology, high-energy weapons combined with bows and arrows and biplanes. And a young boy finds himself in this field of hand mines, which are these really creepy hands coming up out of the ground grabbing people. And the doctor throws the boy a screwdriver and says, okay, you know, just trust me. We'll get you through this. You'll survive. What's your name? And the little boy goes, Davros. Which, as anybody who knows anything about Doctor Who knows, that's the name of the boy or the man who created the Daleks. And then the next portion of the episode is some mysterious person trying to find the doctor. The doctor's clearly hiding, but not necessarily from this weirdo, creepy guy. It seems like more like he's hiding from himself. And sure enough, yes, he's hiding from himself because of the shame, because he faced the dilemma of what do you do when you have the opportunity to kill Hitler? Mm-hmm. And rather than make a decision one way or the other, he avoided it altogether. Naturally, of course, the creepy guy, my brother calls him Voldemort, because he's all snaky, has been sent by Davros to collect the Doctor, and does so, takes him back to Skaro. Now, meanwhile, UNIT is trying to find the Doctor. Missy shows up. She basically gets UNIT's attention by freezing every airplane in the air, and she has the Time Lord equivalent of Last Will and Testament. So while she is, as we noted earlier, not good, she also is very concerned for her very good friend, the Doctor, and second only to her is Last of the Time Lords. And so, yes, the Doctor is very willing. He's very willing to go to visit Davros. Meanwhile, the Daleks capture, well, Missy and Clara agree to go with Lord Voldemort as they try to make something of an escape, or at least explore, you know, find out where they are, where they determine they're on Skaro. Daleks capture them and the TARDIS, and it's not fooling anybody to say that they, while it looks like they've been vaporized, they aren't. But more to the point is that Davros, talking with the Doctor, says, you still think you're in a trap? And the Doctor says, well, I haven't completely eliminated it out of that mind. And so there's a whole lot of things going on here. And the cliffhanger, where you would think nominally would be the apparent vaporization of Missy and Clara, really is cutting back to the planet where the young Davros is standing in the hand minefield, and the Doctor now confronting the young boy with some sort of an energy weapon in his hand, leaving you wondering, is the Doctor going to murder a 10-year-old child?
Yeah.
I think this is the beginning of a multi-cyclical write-your-own-story option, where there's the chance of him going and taking out the kid. There's a chance of him going and saving the kid. There's a chance of, you know, any variation on a theme. And it's still, my question is, will the timeline still straighten itself out such that the ending is always the same?
I think that's a good question. You know, is Davros and are the Daleks a fixed point in time?
One I cannot answer, but I have a question.
Yes.
Well, at least, okay.
So the hand mines, Tim, you brought those up before.
Yep.
Did anybody, I was wondering if anybody thought that was a tip of the hat to Labyrinth, the Pale Man's Eyes.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth. The Pale Man Eyes from that, and a commentary on the sickly nature of the Doctor in his current incarnation.
Ooh.
Hmm.
I'm just reading stuff for, you know, reading into it because I can't. But I thought there was a tip there.
But I think from a visual standpoint, it probably was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think for me, the interesting part of it is my reading between lines comes from the conversation with Davros and the Doctor. That comment Davros has, I bet you think you're in a trap. And when Davros shows the Doctor an image of Clara and Missy being confronted by Daleks, and the Doctor's begging Davros to make them stop, don't have them kill Clara, and Davros says, well, I made them, but I can't control my children. It just makes me wonder if Davros is – he didn't send Daleks to collect – the Doctor. He sent another entity altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't help but wonder if Davros is working at cross purposes or has some ulterior motive separate and apart from whatever it is that the Daleks have going on, which is, of course, naturally just extermination. Because if you remember, the other part is the warrior that the Doctor confronts with the axe battle reveals himself to be a Dalek in disguise.
Hmm.
And if the Daleks were working on the behest of Davros, you would think that that Dalek would have captured the Doctor, and there you go.
Well, but that Dalek did capture, if you will, what they felt was even a more important, you'll excuse the pun, vehicle. and honestly, I wonder if Davros is in essence being kept alive against his will, and he's now turning to the Doctor to do for him what he's done for so many others, whether
as
truthfully
in,
against their will or for their will, let him release him.
As in the Daleks are keeping him alive.
Yes.
And he wants the Doctor to end it.
Yes.
And maybe when you go back to the cliffhanger, oh, Jill, you might be onto something. When he goes back to the cliffhanger and he's about to blast the boy, maybe that's what Davros is really asking the Doctor to do.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought that.
Yeah, go back and kill me because look at what I've wrought. And I'm really finally, over all the millennia, I'm finally sick of what I've done.
Mm-hmm. I cannot undo what I've done. The best I can do is prevent it from happening. And I can't go back and in essence, delete myself. But I can have you erase me.
Yeah. Ooh.
That changes
everything.
That changes.
What I saw at the end of that episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But again, I stipulate the possibility that, and we've seen this in I can't say how many countless Doctor Who episodes, where time corrects itself. Even if he is able to take out Davros, how does that change the timeline? Or will it redirect or rechange itself such that it ends up in the same place? Is this fixed?
And the other part of it is the Daleks clearly have time travel technology. And mm-hmm. so even if you erase the person that created them, do they stand outside that timeline now because they're just distributed all throughout time and space? That doesn't have an effect anymore.
Can I ask a really dumb question?
Of course.
Did the Daleks start remembering the Doctor again?
Last time we saw them.
Wasn't he erased from their memory?
He was. I'm trying to remember how they got him back.
I can't remember either.
I think that's one of those things that...
No. There was a reason. I remember they said, you know, we found you here and we reabsorbed you into our consciousness. Or something happened that undid something else.
Well, there was the 11th Doctor episode on the Asylum of the Daleks, where Claire Oswald as a Dalek...
Yeah, her incarnation as Oswin Oswald.
Yeah,
deleted him from the Daleks' computers.
Right. So they had no idea who they were. But I don't remember that there was anything explicitly stating that the Daleks remembered him again. I mean, the next time we see the Daleks really is Into the Daleks.
Well, I keep thinking there's a silence.
Oh, no, I'll take that back. The Daleks show up again in the time of the Doctor. I'll pardon me. They show up in the time of the Doctor as one of the various factions trying to fight their way into Christmas Town.
Yeah, they were. I'm actually trying to look it up right now.
Yeah. See, I think that's one of those things. One of the things that I've really liked about the 12th Doctor's run so far is they somehow managed to minimize the problem with plot holes that I think has plagued the Stephen Moffat era.
Oh, okay. I found it. I actually found it. In the time of the Doctor, they assimilated the Mother Superior of the Church of the Papal Mainframe, Tasha Lem, and she knew the Doctor. So when they assimilated her as a Dalek, you know, we are the Daleks. Resistance is futile.
nice crossplay.
Thank you. When they... There's a direct quote, you know, step away from that Dalek unit, Doctor. You shouldn't even know who I am. Information concerning the Doctor was harvested from the cadaver of Tasha Lem.
There we go. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. I solved the mystery.
Yay. Thank you. Yep.
So we have some speculation for season 9 going forward. Wow. Do you undo the Daleks and do they come back made by somebody else or... Do you just kill Davros and let the Daleks continue on as they are? Interesting.
Or do you wipe out the beginning? And what takes its place if there is a balance in the universe and there is an exquisite good, if you will, and an exquisite evil, if you want to go by the Dalek balance? What's being replaced?
Well, I don't think Moffat could get away from eliminating the Daleks and replacing them with a monster of his own creation. I think there literally would be picket riots lines in Cardiff.
Yes.
or people would be going, you know, they're not really gone, and it would be a semi-bogus, you know, part of the, like with Missy being vaporized and Clara being vaporized, clearly they're not gone.
Yeah.
All right. You know, if for no other reason, we know that Jenna Coleman isn't, that her departure from the show has been announced for the Christmas special. Okay. Yeah. So any real drama around their disappearance, there really isn't any, except to wonder what parlor trick they've pulled. You know, I go back to the title of the episode, The Magician's Apprentice.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to look for where the sleight of hand has occurred or the redirect.
Well, I actually have a theory about that, and it's not a very clever one. It's just something that I remembered. I am the worst ever with freaking episode titles. I guess it would be Bad Wolf, the episode where the Doctor and Jack and Rose were all in those pseudo TV shows.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If you remember, they were vaporizing people and stuff there, and they weren't really vaporizing them, and the Daleks were behind that.
Right.
Yeah, if you'll notice, whenever we see a Dalek kill somebody, the person doesn't disappear. When they die, they get all electrified and they drop dead. But Clara and Missy both disappeared.
Good call on that one. I didn't even catch that.
Now I feel special. But no, I happen to remember that, and I was like, yeah, I think they got zapped, dude.
Well, the question is, where do they end up?
That is the question left us to answer.
Well,
at least until next week.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That will happen this weekend.
Yep.
Is it okay. Saturday yet?
No, almost. Well, that should cover it for our discussion today on everything TV with season 8, season 9, the best of our speculations for future episodes and plot arcs and plot twists. Thank you guys.
You're welcome. We're going to have this conversation next week, right? Because then the second part of The Magician's Apprentice will have aired. Yeah.
We will have to revisit more Doctor-ness because we have comic books to talk about. We have novels to talk about. And when is Gallifrey 1 in January?
Gallifrey 1 actually takes place in February.
February.
And yeah, and it is at this point sold out. I don't know 100% for sure how membership transfers are working. I'm not sure if they are this year because they're doing something new in terms of purchasing memberships in that they opened up a certain number of single-day tickets. But you can always get more information on, you know, how to get a membership, if at all possible, on Gallifrey1.com. And the convention will be February 12th through 14th at the Marriott in Los Angeles near LAX. And so far, the guest list is shaping up to be incredible. There's going to be two doctors there.
Which ones?
Peter Davison and Colin Baker. So 5 and 6 on site. Nicola Bryant's going to be there. Fraser Hines, he's been there before. Wonderful guest. I believe that both Nev McIntosh and I'm blanking on the actress's name. I suck. The actress who plays Jenny to her Madame Vastra. I believe they're both going to be there. Yeah, we've been trying to get Jenny for a few years now, but there's always these scheduling conflicts and stuff like that. And they're always announcing new guests all the time. You know, you can see announcements up until the last minute. So, you know, stay tuned to that space. You know, see if you can try and get yourself another membership. But yeah, Gallifrey 1, Station 27 looks to be amazing.
Nice. So we will definitely keep people abreast of what's going on in preparation for Gallifrey 1. But I say let's do this again in December, after the season is aired, and maybe for the teasing the Christmas special, because I'm sure more info about it will have come out before then. What do you say?
Mm-hmm.
I am all for it. This is fun, man.
And we'll have more Who novels to talk about by then, and more comics, and we can do books, comics, Christmas special, Gallifrey 1 preview. So you have homework, Liz.
Aye, aye, Corporal Captain.
Corporal Captain?
Yeah, it's a new rank they're trying out, you know? what do you think?
I think Corporeal Captain.
Yes. Oh. I don't like it. Don't like it at all. That's what
I was
no
waiting
one
for.
One
it.
Against.
Oh, okay. Corporal Captain.
Oh, my goodness.
It took me a moment. I'm sorry.
We are geeks.
We are hardcore geeks.
We are us and our geekery.
Is there such a thing as a MASH geek, though?
Yes. Yeah. Because I am one.
Okay.
What
so, yes.
say, ferret face?
So, yes. Everything has a geekdom. MASH has a geekdom. Rocky Horror Picture Show has a geekdom. 40 years of Rocky Horror this...
Ha. Yeah, right? Oh,
yeah.
Hey.
Yes. I wrote an article on Slice of Sci-Fi. Go check it out. Comment on it. It literally, that's, you are not fully free to fly your own personal geek flag until you've let it all hang out because of Rocky Horror. That's what I'm saying. But
I think it's an accurate summary. Yeah.
But again, Jill, Liz, Tim, thank you. And Sean. Off in the distance somewhere. Thank you for your Doctor Who commentary. We will do this again.
Thanks for having us aboard.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
There's a little superhero in all of us. Listen to Krypton Radio every day, and we'll help you find yours.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
You think I'd remember by now that whenever we talk about Doctor Who or Marvel Comics and a couple of other key topics, we tend to run long because, well, that's how we roll. And you think I'd remember that by now, that there was no way we were going to be able to cover all the topics that I hoped we would. I really did want to get to the novels. The novels are already out. Some of them are very, very entertaining, and I think you'd enjoy them. If you go over to writersafterdark.com, you will find in the, let's say the books received section for this year and last year, you'll see that there are a handful of novels out, and those are just the ones that I got sent. There are tons more out there, and a lot of them are getting really, really good reviews. And more are coming out every day. I shouldn't say every day. Every month, it seems like more Who-ness is arriving. So, yeah, I should have known we'd run really long. But that's the great thing about podcast entertainment. We can talk about it again later. So yeah, we'll save the comics and the novels for the Christmas special discussion, which will encompass all of season 9. And didn't even have a chance to come anywhere near talking about the comic series that Titan Comics is printing. They have a series just for the 9th Doctor. They have a series just for the 10th Doctor. They have a series just for the 11th Doctor. And a series just for the 12th Doctor. In fact, in honor of the start of Season 9, they did a crossover called The Four Doctors. They had some really, really nice variant covers. Some well-written stories, from what I'm given. I haven't read all of them, but the ones I have read are entertaining. They are, I don't know how soon they're collected into graphic novels after they come out individually, but We have reviews of some of those issues, and an interview with a couple of the creators of the Titan Comics over at It's Comic Book Day, so check that out. But that will do it for this episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call them in. That number is 602-635-6976. That's 602-635-6976. Leave a voice message, or if you want, record one yourself on your own gear and email it to summer@sliceofscifi.com. If you could, please go over to iTunes and give us a review. Leave us a review over at iTunes. Let people know that you're still listening to Slice of Sci-Fi and recommend that they check it out. At least see what we've got going on these days. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's @SliceOfSciFi. You can check us out on Google+. Look for Slice of Sci-Fi there. There's a Facebook page and a Facebook group that unfortunately have not been updated in quite a while because I no longer have a Facebook minion. Haven't had one since about May. And I don't know when I will get another one. We'll figure it out. Come check out the websites sliceofscifi.com and it's comicbookday.com. And yeah, there, I'm going to be ninja sneaky and say, keep your eye on writersafterdark.com and kickassmysticninjas.com. You never know when something new and interesting may drop over over there as well. Your donations do keep this show running and the other shows. Oops, did I just tease that a little bit harder? Yes, I did. It keeps everything going. These websites are not cheap to host. The traffic and volume on Slice of Sci-Fi is a lot more than your basic average hosting account can handle. So we've had to be at a higher tier for that for quite some time, like 8 years now. Paying for the hosting, paying for the media hosting, paying for the hosting of the other websites like Babylon Podcast and Charlie Jade and Ninjas, and even keeping Dragon Page online. That your donations help keep all that stuff online. I am working on a Patreon page. I have to get that up and running very soon for the people who have requested it. And after the Patreon page is up, I will sit down and figure out my technical glitches and get the weekend live show going. Hopefully we can smooth out those rough edges and give you some quality, shall we say, live yet unexpected entertainment. But that's it for this show. Thank you. Thank you so much to Sci-Fried for the music, and a belated thank you to Tim Callender for the new space spiral artwork that adorns the show and soon will be adorning the website. Anyway, that will do it, but we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.